You know, you can create some technology that solves a customer problem, but if you don't get adoption, yeah. if they don't change their business processes to take that into account, then you almost created nothing, you know. So the change, and we're seeing that, you know, the debate at a more social level with ChatGPT, you know, yeah. some universities saying we're going to ban it, others saying we're going to, you know, learn how to integrate it and use it.
Welcome to the NZX opening bell, and today we're going to be all about tech. So we're talking today to, I've already stuffed that up, Alfrio, the team from there. So we've got Greg Buller, the CEO, and Rami Albeltagi. Now, look, thanks for being here today, both of you. And we're kind of excited to talk about what your vibe is for tech and why you love it and what got you into it. So let's start with you, Greg. You know, what actually got you interested in the tech sector?
Well, I probably really just fell into it, to be truthful. You know, my first role out of university, I joined a global tech giant. I didn't know it at the time. I just joined the company that was going to pay me the most. But I really loved it. I found the problems that you got to solve, both for the customer and the organization, were super exciting. And they're a company that was really focused on innovation, but the data science and database problem solving was really something that appealed to me and has been a big part of my career.
Now, Rami, as the VP of Engineering, obviously just that title in itself tells me that tech's probably been in your life as well for a long time.
Sure.
What got you interested?
Yeah, good question. I was reflecting on that before, and the last years of schooling, one of the typical students going, what am I going to be doing next with my life? And went to a career fair. And what really caught my attention was this one character who I still remember to this day, who was talking about tech and robotics. And then they were talking about having, you know, a mechatronics degree. And obviously at the time I was like, what is mechatronics? That sounds like fun. That's I want to do something fun growing up. So this is me.
Yeah. Now, given your different pathways, what I'd love to hear from both of you, and I'll start with you, Rami, you know, what have you actually seen, or what insight have you got into how the tech sector's kind of evolved since you started? Or has it evolved?
Oh, it's evolved massively in so many different ways. I think the people that are getting involved with tech is growing, and there's a lot more interest. You know, if you take a step back, even at a global scale, and the power of technology in terms of how it's been transforming the way we live, the way we work, the way we interact, the way we do things, and just the plethora of information that we've got all around us, that's all. But it's, you know, amazing at how fast the growth of tech is all around us.
Yeah, I certainly remember when I first started. I was working in a group of about 20 engineers, and we had one computer for the 20 of us. But within a couple of years, we all had our own. We went from internal communications with a green kind of screen to internet capability within a couple of years, and that pace of change hasn't stopped. And so it's been really rapid and continues to be. So it's super exciting to see the impact that it has on productivity and the way we work and live.
It's not slowing either, is it?
No, absolutely not. And the problems that you can solve today versus, you know, 10 years ago, it's just blows your mind, really. And so it's a great space to be in, and there's lots of opportunities. So.
Yeah, I think, you know, what it's doing in terms of efficiency all around us and convenience is just massive.
And I think back to Greg's point as well around data. You know, like when you think about validation, so the world is in a really interesting place, and we want, you know, the geopolitical, global perspective right now, we've got everybody wants verification. Yeah. And there's more scrutiny, and we can't say we're good at something. We have to show we are or show we've done the right things.
But I think that's the power of some of the data that you have available now. Before, you were limited to data sources that were, you know, you could track and keep yourself. But now there's data everywhere. And so the bigger challenge is, how do you filter out the irrelevant data and tell your story, because there's just so much of it. So the challenge is very different from not having enough to be able to tell your story, from having too much in a way to be able to synthesize and come up with something meaningful. So different sorts of challenges, but, you know, a fantastic place to be in.
And so, 100%. The way I look at it is, we've got the answers, and the challenge is, what are the questions? Because we've got so much data, and we can process it, we can aggregate it, we can interrogate it in different ways. Now, obviously a lot of different costs and different ways of doing things. But so we've got the answers. What are the questions? What are we trying to solve? What are the problems, etc.? And that's where power of data comes in.
And where would you see then, if we sort of stay on that, if we think about opportunities and challenges going forward in tech or data, where do either of you sort of see that going? I guess we start with opportunity. Is that better?
Yeah. I think that the power of the information that we have to be able to speed up the cycles of product development, for example, and their ability to get information on different personas or different customers. Yeah. From a global perspective, you don't just have to say, well, I need to go and collect information on your couple of customers in New Zealand. You can collect that data globally. So the ability to go fast and come up with more robust solutions is really powerful. But, there's challenges with that, of course, because, again, you get back to, well, we've got so much information. Yeah. Do we get, over paralysis based on, just having too much to absorb? But
and the danger of potentially averaging, because you've got so much, but then you're trying to average because you think that'll make sense, but the reality of it is that just muddies it.
Yeah, no, but that's, I guess, that's part of the challenge, isn't it? It's understanding the variation, which is what the data scientists are all about, I guess, is so that new field that's kind of sprung up in the last 5 years. Is all about understanding that variation from something,
and back to that point around what's of impact versus what might be interesting.
Yeah,
so right. Do we need to know the three things that happen on a Tuesday? Maybe not, but what are the potential variances or risks, or can it forecast for what might happen in the future so you can actually create a product or something through? What about you, Rami? Any kind of other thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think, one thing is around the change management, right? Because we've got so much good technology all around us and we could potentially incorporate it into the way we're doing things, especially as businesses. But how do you take that, incorporate it, and get people aligned and working in the same, all in the same direction? So that's an important factor to take into account, because there's so much around change management when it comes to the change readiness of people and taking it on board, but also upskilling to make sure that people and having the right skills and expertise to be able to utilize and leverage the technology that's always constantly evolving. So I'm talking about change management, but there's also the skills and capabilities and therefore the ongoing learning and staying up to speed with the latest.
Because there's always that fear, isn't there, that you're kind of going to be replaced by a computer. But the reality, I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm a bit naive, but I see it as augmentation. Mm. Man plus machine, very awesome. Machine alone, few faults. Man alone or woman alone,
a lot of faults.
And then we put them together and we get this beautiful augmentation. And I heard once, I think it was through the actual Australian government, saying that that tech is the golden thread that ties everything together. Mm. And for me, I think when we get humans, we can enhance intuition. We can enhance the great skills that we have. It doesn't actually remove it.
Yeah. I think the change management part of it, though, is, and to get that value or that enhancement that you talk about, is hugely important. And we've seen that even in the company that we work for. You can create some technology that solves a customer problem, but if you don't get adoption, if they don't change their business processes to take that into account, then you almost created nothing, So the change, and we're seeing that, the debate at a more social level with ChatGPT, some universities saying we're going to ban it, others saying we're going to, learn how to integrate it and use it. And so it doesn't matter whether it's at an individual product level or at a society level, that ability to leverage it or get value from it by thinking about the change impact that's required is hugely important. And
there's two key things around that spring to mind around, one, the resistance to change, and two, the speed of adoption.
Yeah.
So you gotta work on both them at the same time, not just internally within an organization, but also with the customers. And exactly like what Greg was saying around the different maturity of different customers. And there's so much for tech companies to do to educate and take everyone along on the journey. in any
we're all a bit lazy, aren't we? You know, like when I get an app, I just want it to do stuff for me so I don't have to think anymore. You know, I don't actually have to want to put something into it. And I think that's, unfortunately, tech has kind of fallen into that trap, in particular apps. I know in the ag space a lot of it'll be a quick fix, it'll be a silver bullet, it'll be, and you forget that you actually have to do the work to get it to do what you need it to do. Because again, it's that man plus machine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. And that's the, you know, the man part or the person part is that change management part, isn't it? If you don't work out how to use it, then the tech's useless. And so it's you can almost have some ordinary tech with people who are really excited about it and use it, getting more benefit from someone who's got a super technical solution that no one wants, you know. It's kind of, it's,
I mean, if you hit the nail with the handle of the hammer, you're not going to drive it in, are you? So it's all about how you're holding the tool and how you use it, as opposed to anything else.
And so I think for tech companies, that's a hugely important part, is remembering that, tech's great, but you've got to get people to adopt and use and so on, and you've got to put as much effort into that as you do into the technology itself.
I mean, one thing I noticed when I was researching the company is, you know, Alfrio. It's so cool. I'm sorry I keep getting that wrong, because it's such a cool Alfrio.
Al is te reo, or Maori for world.
Oh.
And frio is cold in Spanish.
Oh, how cool.
So it's our world of cold.
Oh, I love that. A world of cold.
Yeah.
Alfrio.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. That's gorgeous. We should have started with that. Now you've done such a big job on helping your customers be more sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see tech being a real driver for that in the future?
Absolutely. And it's not just in our industry, it's in many industries. But if we use our industry as an example, in a commercial refrigeration, and there's over 500 million commercial refrigerators in the world, so there's lots. Yeah. And, the technology that we introduced originally was a high efficiency motor, and it improved their efficiency of this from a standard motor by about 50%. And so has a huge impact on the amount of energy that commercial refrigerators use. And in that time, as a practical example, it's like running Huntley Power Station for 4 years. So we could have run it for 4 years less by using this technology globally. And so it's a huge impact. Huntley Power Station uses about 15% of New Zealand, it creates about 15% of New Zealand's energy. So it's a big amount of energy that we've saved by using this type of, our customers have saved by using this type of technology. But it doesn't stop. That's the interesting thing, because, you know, we're going through the next iteration of development of that technology, and we expect to be able to take another 30% of the energy out with the next iteration. So, again, huge impacts that technology is paying to, you know, enhance, I guess, or reduce the amount of energy that's being used.
Hmm.
And that won't slow down, because the demand for sustainable solutions is continuing. And so it's about, you know, smart people, engineers and innovators coming up with different things to apply technology to. And as the technology changes and evolves, you know, we talk about the next 30%, but that's not only because we've come up with some stuff, but because you can collaborate globally now with some of the technology that you have, you're able to partner with other people and say, well, if we work together, we could deliver this benefit.
Cool. I love that.
And so that's a really important part of how we're going forward, is it's a lot about partnerships to say, okay, well, you know, there's still need for more energy savings, or how do you partner? And that's much easier with the technology that's available today, is to work globally.
That's awesome. I think that partnership thing, you know, I don't think New Zealand does that very well across business, but when we do it well, we do it really well. Mm. And I love that concept too of saving energy, because it's, I think sometimes we forget, in a lot of these sustainability, you actually save money as well. So, you know, not only are you saving 15% that you can shift to 30, that's potentially massive cost savings for people as well.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that's interesting about that cost saving part, I don't think the accounting standards, if you like, have stepped up with the change that's required from a sustainability perspective. And it's starting to happen.
Yep.
You know, the NZX, for example, you know, with coming up with the reporting standards and so on, that's all going to help try and truly value the cost of, you know, consumption of energy or carbon. And I think those kind of things also help make their adoption easier, because we have, when companies start to change their measurement systems and so on, they'll start to say, oh, you know, we have to measure something in a different way. So you'll have different drivers and incentives to try and make their adoption or acceptance of technology easier.
Yeah.
But it's again, it's that change management part. If someone's still being driven by the wrong metric, then you don't get adoption. Yeah. Whereas if you change the metric, which is what the work is around the reporting standards, you start to get a different view of what makes sense and what doesn't make sense.
Hmm. Rami, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think, you know, from, I mean, starting back, the global warming is obviously a thing, and it's a serious thing, and climate change is happening. So I think it's for everyone to have an impact on making a change. And, you know, when we're talking about co-creation of solutions and co-creation and working together to find solutions to the problems is the way to go. From a FRIOS perspective, you know, we're doing a lot in terms of having more efficient components in terms of our motors and our fans and our controllers that control the full of, you know, refrigeration asset, and then taking that data and making a big effect on a fleet perspective.
Great.
But I think what is really going to make a change is when we look at it from an optimized solution perspective rather than individual components. And when you look at it from an optimized solution, that's when the tech becomes really important, because you're working on a fleet and you know, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of these units all around the world, and what can we do at a global scale? And that's when it becomes massively beneficial to the world. And we're not going to do this by ourselves. That's when partnerships and co-creations comes into play, because, you know, you'll get a lot more working together rather than trying individually.
I think my big inspiration from Alfredo is FRIO. Gosh, is that supply chain.
Yeah.
Enhancement and enablement and empowerment. Hmm. And I think if I'm a processor or whatever, if I'm creating, growing, sending, exporting, I need to not only validate, but I also need to make sure what's happening in my supply chain. And you're really empowering supply chains to be more effective and more efficient.
Yeah. So where we've started is we've very much started at the point of sale. So, you know, if you think about your corner dairy and a restaurant or your supermarket, there's just stacks of refrigerators there. So we've very much focused there. But some of our customers are now starting to say, well, can you help us? Because you're helping us here, can you help us go up and down, like you say, the supply chain? And so the opportunity from our perspective is huge to be able to, you know, keep food fresh and safe at the point of sale. But that takes the whole supply chain to work to allow that to happen. So, you know, so there's a real opportunity in this space to, you know, use technology to, you know, reduce food waste and keep it fresh and healthy for people right at the point of sale. So,
and that's a big thing. Food waste is, you know, actually putting aside everything else, food waste is one of the big things. And if you can stop that, I mean, the percentages are high. I think it's close to, I think it's between 38, it bounces between 38% sort of 50.
Yeah, we typically say 30 to be conservative, but it's between 30 and 50% is what they talk about in terms of food that just gets thrown away or wasted somewhere in the supply chain. It's a huge number.
And that's a big part of sustainability, right? Because a lot of times when people talk about sustainability and their minds go towards climate change, but it's certainly not just climate change. There's a lot bigger picture. It's part of sustainability, and food waste is another one that's, you know, dear to our hearts.
Well, it's utilization, isn't it? Because it's, you don't have to produce as much when everything you have is getting used.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. So it's a productivity, like, if you like, at a macro scale. But it's about reducing energy, because you don't have to use two whatevers to create something. You just use one. And so it's better for, you know, the planet, essentially.
And you keep it fresher for longer, and therefore I can keep it till Thursday, where maybe I could only keep it till Tuesday, and then it gets eaten, and then I'm wasting less, and then we have to grow less, and it sort of becomes this really nice, fulfilling prophecy, doesn't it? Yeah. Now, what would you say then the success has been? Like, what would you attribute sort of the inspiration to the success of the company?
Yeah, I think there's probably two big things that I talk about is from our perspective, customer intimacy was hugely important. So our customers are all around the world. So having people in region who understand their customers, understand the way they do business, that change management, and being able to support them with technology locally, not from here, has been a hugely important part of our success. And I think for any technology company, thinking through the how is adoption going to happen is that really important part. But the second part is around innovation. You know, we've solved problems that our customers thought were unsolvable. Cool. And so I think, originally IoT data costs were really high.
Yep.
And we came up with a solution for our customers that allowed them to keep data transfer costs really low. Now, data costs are coming down over time and making it more and more accessible, but that was our, you know, the key innovations originally when we started in this IoT space, which is essentially collecting data from fleets of refrigerators, sending it to the cloud and turning it into useful information for people to make decisions on. That cost was just far too high originally, and we solved that for our customers and allowed from here and allowed, you know, the creation, if you like, of the IoT business for, you know, branded bottle coolers is where we started. So ones that have, you know, drinks in them. But now we've been able to take that technology to food and other things.
Cool.
So it's really interesting story. So those two things, customer intimacy and, you know, innovation, I think is, you know, the key to it.
Yeah, I love that. Those are cool things that are actually all speaking to my heart. I'm still stuck on the partnership thing, which I think is great, and that co-creation.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's Google, right? Wasn't actually a search engine. It was like five or six different things that were put together. Yeah. Uber is five or six things that were put together.
And Amazon,
Amazon, yeah, you know, all these things. People think that a guy just come up one day or a girl, sorry, I can't, you know, a person came up with an idea one day and just whipped it up, but people don't realize that often it's small ideas that all came together.
Yeah, it's interesting how we talk about guys, but, you know, that's one of the big changes that's happened in tech, hasn't it?
Yep.
And is one of the reasons that it's accelerating is because it's coming more mainstream and everyone is participating in tech. Mm. And so I think that's hugely important for the, you know, continued growth of technology and getting value out of it is it's not just a couple of geeks in the back corner.
Yep.
This is really mainstream and everyone's participating in it. And I think it's hugely important.
Yeah. And it's integrated now. It's integrated into our life. You know, you couldn't actually be, if you only like paper, you're probably not going to survive long regardless of what your role is.
Yeah.
Because it's back to that enhancing what we do.
Yeah.
So, Rami, what sort of challenges have you seen through the, you know, obviously we've heard the successes, but have there been challenges along the way?
Challenges in terms of adoption or?
Yeah. And we're even leading to the company's success. Like, have there been?
So I think, you know, from a challenges perspective, not so much a challenges perspective, but one thing we did really well is build a really good culture around innovation. Internally, so that, you know, might have started off as a challenge, but we put in really focused effort into improving the culture, and that's around having open collaboration and transparency across the organization when it comes to innovation. You know, from a product and engineering perspective, we put in a lot of effort into not having silos and having a lot of discussion happening in any sort of product development that we get into. And that's not just within the product development teams, but also getting really close to the customers. And, you know, linking back to what Greg was saying around becoming really customer intimate, we've got regional teams that talk to our customers every single day. So one of the key things that we've done is getting our product and engineering team talking to our regional teams as well as talking to our customers to get that information to help in the product development and overcome any challenges.
So you have quite an immediate feedback loop.
All the time. And we actually involve them in any sort of product development along the way. And that's the co-creation part, is that we're not doing it in silo from, you know, one end of the world in little New Zealand. We're actually... We're global. We get really close to our customers all around the world and involve them in the development of any new technology or any new product development that we get into. And also, there was another thing that it's just...
It'll come back.
Come back, I'm sure. I'll come back to it.
But I think, you know, you have to actually work at creating innovation culture. It just doesn't happen. And so, you know, we've been quite deliberate, you know, internally, I guess, trying different things to help foster that innovation. And one of the things that we've introduced in the last couple of years is this thing that we call permission to explore. Mm. And so we have a couple of weeks a year where the whole organisation, so everyone stops doing their day-to-day business and comes together, and we form teams, and the teams themselves suggest what problem they're going to work on.
Cool.
And so that then they spend a week solving that problem. So we get salespeople working with the techs, versing with the supply chain people, all coming together in all these unique kind of groups. And that, and then at the end of it, they have to do a short presentation. And most of the things, not all, but most of the things flow into our products somewhere, or give us an idea to say, well, perhaps we should explore that some more. And so, innovation culture doesn't happen by just saying we're going to have an innovative culture. Yeah. You actually have to have things that, you know, work to,
well, you have to
create
give
that
permission to fail, don't you?
Yeah, that's,
you know,
right.
By having that innovation 2 weeks or their you know, explore time, then you kind of have permission to just think differently.
Yeah, that's right. And forget about all your day-to-day stuff. And so, you know, we certainly learn that, you know, those groups help us go fast. They help people have a bit of fun too. So, people really enjoy it.
What a cool idea.
Yeah, so that's one of the things we've been trying. But you've got to continually refresh your innovation culture and the things that you think about to help make sure you're staying at the top end of your game.
And you have to stick to it, don't you?
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
That's a tough thing, is I think, you know, we all want to have an innovative culture, but then it's nerve-wracking. I imagine it's scary to take people out of a business for 2 weeks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's like you get a few raised eyebrows for sure, but when you see the output, there's no doubt it's the right thing for us to do. It doesn't mean it's the right thing for every organisation. We tried a few different, you know, we thought about it differently originally, and we thought, oh, well, we'll just do half a day on Friday. But no, that didn't really work for us. And so we found that, you know, everyone for a week is much better than half a day every week. And so, but different organisations will be different, but that's what's working for us. So
that's awesome. Yeah.
And I love it when we take those ideas that come up from P2E and actually implement them and get something out of it, rather than just saying, you know, it's just a week to do something that's different and then completely forget about it. A lot of those ideas are actually taken into account and put into place, and people love that. And you know, now everyone's always looking forward to the next P2E week. And by the way, that was the point that I forgot earlier. I was like, and got to mention P2E, and it slipped my mind, and I said, it'll come back to me, and Greg brought it back. So
that is awesome, though, because I think, too, it's such a big privilege as a human when somebody takes your idea, and even if you just investigate it and it doesn't go somewhere, going through that process is really cool.
And it's involving everyone in the business, right? It's amazing how you get these teams that have people from Mexico and Turkey and New Zealand all working at the same time on one potential problem, right? So you get this focused effort from a group of individuals, and that's what has such a big impact. And when people see that, how much can happen within a week, then, you know, that's how you build a really good innovative culture.
Or power of perspective. Yeah. You know, like, we're not, no one person's going to have all the ideas.
Yeah, and the diversity of ideas. And, you know, and what we talk about when we say is, well, you've all bought something from a commercial refrigerator, so you all know something.
Yeah.
So get in and share your ideas and thinking. And it doesn't matter whether you're from the supply chain team or the finance team, you all have a perspective on this, and you have different backgrounds. And so you get a diverse, that diverse thought comes into the problem solving. And it's quite amazing. So it's a,
oh my gosh, I love that. It's honestly, it's really funny. I worked at KPMG many years ago, and we talked a lot about people actually doing that, and I didn't realise companies were. Yeah. I think that's so cool. I think it's such a great, hopefully it can continue, and hopefully other people are inspired by that as well.
Yeah, so we think it's one of the key things, you know, from in staff engagement and involvement in our organisation, it's worked really well. But like I say, it works for us, so it doesn't mean it's going to work for everybody else, but it's been really successful. So
I think the other point that you mentioned, Julia, was the fail, around failing, right? Or permission to fail. And I think that that's really important in terms of, you know, you try different things, you fail, and that's fine. It's not about failing. It's about learning from that failure, and what can you take on board and apply and pivot really quickly and apply it in different way and continuing on that path, right? So it's having a culture in terms of, it's okay to fail, and guess what, we will fail sometimes. We're not going to get it perfect every single time, and learning and improving and moving forward.
And doing it fast, fast.
Yeah. So we've kind of, I don't kind of like the fail fast. I kind of go, I kind of like learn fast.
No, I like it.
And so that's really what we focus on. Yep. And that's why we call it permission to explore, because it's permission to learn something. You know, it's, you know, if you you know, make an experiment and you find one thing or the other, both of them are good. You know, just because you can now go and tick those off, whether it was the direction you want to go or not, you can tick something off and say, well, we don't have to worry about that. We've learnt that. Now we can move on to something else. And
I think people forget that too, that's such a good point. Even if something doesn't work, you've given it a nudge and you know it doesn't work.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
You park it and you move on, and maybe you circle back in 3 years, 2 years.
And I think that's an important point of that message too, is it doesn't work today.
Yeah.
Or you learn something today, but you know, in a year's time or 2 years' time, the world may have changed and what you learnt then may be totally applicable now. So, you know, keeping that learning cycle going is really important. And if you think about what agile, you know, the iteration kind of cycles or design thinking kind of cycles, that's what it's about. It's about going through cycles of learning and learning fast. And and if you can, involve customers. You know, that's what we would say.
Always involve your customers.
You know, vital part of that, I think.
So if we start then, take that learning fast, and we think about the focus on the future for tech, you know, we've had ChatGPT that's come in. I quite like it. It's quite handy. I like having a little bit of a play, see what it comes up with every now and then.
I love it to the point that when it first became everyone was talking about it, etc. We actually shared it on our company Teams chat and said, "Hey, check this out and make use of it and let's learn together. Let's understand what this is all about." So, yeah, I reckon we as companies we need to leverage new technologies as they come up.
So, what else what else do you think is going to come online, such as that? You know, is AI the next big thing?
Oh, I think it is around data science and how we leverage and use data to make decisions. You know, and that's essentially what ChatGPT is about. It's about pulling a whole bunch of data and helping synthesize it and prepare it to answer your particular question. But that's what machine learning and AI are all about. It's using data and information to make better quality decisions faster and more robustly. And I think all of these, whether it's a generic tool or a very specific on a particular industry, I think they're the things that are going to make the big difference. And I really like that. So,
yeah. Yeah, I like that too. Now, Rami, as an engineer, though, like, what excites you the most? Because what I love about engineering brains is there's no can't do, how do.
And it's more, what's the problem and how do we solve the problem?
Yeah, you're excited by something that's difficult. You're not like, my God, this is going to take me forever. You're like, woo, let's do this. But what excites you the most about the future of tech?
I think just how we can leverage it more. Right, because one key thing is like AI has been around for many years. It's not necessarily something new, and it's been called many different things in the past.
Yep.
And there's so much advancements and items that are, I guess, working in parallel to help being able to leverage and scale and put into use a lot of this technology that probably wasn't or cost effective to apply. And it's more around what are the applications and how can we make use of the tech in those applications, right? Like there's so much happening in kind of quantum computing, which is going to revolutionize the use of computers being from a speed perspective.
Yep.
There's a lot of innovation happening, or we all know 5G is going to come into play, and that's going to improve speed and latency. From a comms perspective, there's a lot happening in AI. There's a lot happening in IoT. Now, how can we leverage all of these different technologies for the right applications? And that's what excites me. I think
that's awesome. That's a lot.
But I think we talk about climate change too, but technology is going to play a huge part of it. It's not until we start to say this is a real problem, and you start getting engineers and scientists really thinking hard about solving their problems, and we'll solve those problems as engineers and scientists and people that interact with them. So sometimes you have to have a nudge to make something more important or important enough to get people's minds thinking of it. And I think you're going to start to see some acceleration in the things that leveraging these technologies to solve some of those problems. And so I'm hugely optimistic.
So what are the big goals then for you in the future? Either one. Oh.
The big goals for us in the future. I think it's continuing, well, from a technology perspective, it's continuing to leverage the technology that's out there for the right applications to make it in a cost-effective way, and having and being able to prove a return on investment to the customers to solve the customers' problems.
So I think the areas that, you know, we're going to be focused on is, you know, continuing to enhance sustainability solutions. Yep. So we think that's really important. We've talked a little bit about some of the things that we're doing already, and that continues to be a big part of our value story. But we're then taking, as we also talked about, from a markets perspective, the next parts that we're going to apply this type of technology to is more food and food safety, as opposed to general commercial refrigeration. So we've started very much with the bottle coolers kind of thing. We've really learned how to use that technology, and now we're going to food and supply chains around food. So, you know, that's really the next things for us, and we think there's huge applicability.
Yeah.
When we start, you know, we started with this IoT for commercial refrigeration about 6 years ago, and it took us about 4 years to get the first 1 million commercial refrigerators connected. And in the last 2 years, we've connected another 1 million. So, you know, it's accelerating the adoption and speed at which these kind of technologies have an impact. So it's ramping up, and we feel that we have technology that we can leverage, because we don't create the AI technology, but we learn how to use it and we learn how to apply it to our industry. And so, you know, that's the space we're in, and we see rapid acceleration to be able to help solve sustainability and food waste problems. So it's kind of...
And I guess it's solving, you know, back to the customer point, it's the customer's customer problem as well, and the customer's problem, because there's always, you know, the end user can be quite a way down. So the more you dig in, there's always going to be a problem to solve.
Yeah. And leveraging what we know and what we have, but also continuing to evolve our learnings and come up with new things. You know, like we touched on in the past, you know, sustainability from a food waste and climate change are two big items that we can't do alone, and we're working with others constantly to try and improve that. But I feel like we've got a lot of already we've got a lot of expertise to apply to help in those areas, and then taking the learnings and looking at what other verticals we can potentially, or different market segments we can apply that to, because technology is applicable in a lot of different areas. So that's
awesome. So sort of final comments, if startups are listening, what is your advice? What would be, Greg, what would be your two or three points for a startup?
I think customer intimacy. Solve customers' problems and make sure you understand them well would be a first thing. But go through cycles with your customers. Don't try
the painkiller, not the vitamin.
Yeah, don't try and solve everything in one go. Iterate on your solution. Start, get something out there that's valuable. Add to it.
Cool.
But keep working really closely with them. So that would be my advice.
Rami, anything to
leverage what you know and leverage the people that are around you? I think for any startup, it's knowing what you know, but also continuously learn, but also who is around you, who can help you solve the big problems of the world.
That big partnership, to that co-creation, don't be afraid to share.
Oh, 100%, and fail. Learn fast.
We've got a new one now. I'm going to use it. I'm going to copy that now. We're learning fast now. We're not failing fast.
Yeah, we're learning fast. Yeah.
Look, huge thank you to both of you for coming in and chatting with us. We are, okay, quick fire round. Ooh, nice. I knew there was, I actually looked before. It's always a quick fire round. Now, what's your number one piece of tech you cannot live without?
Well, it's interesting. This has changed, isn't it? It's gone from your credit card to your laptop to your mobile phone.
Yeah.
And I don't know what's next, but certainly today it'd be your mobile phone, I think.
Rami, what's yours?
Yeah, I was going to say the same. Definitely my mobile phone. It stays with me. It's got it's basically information at the fingertips, and it's got, you know, a linking to family and friends, and it's got my credit card. It's got everything in there. So, definitely the mobile phone at the moment.
And what would be the most exciting piece of tech you would love to see invented in the future?
For me, I was thinking about this as I was walking in today, and the rain is pouring down and it's windy. I thought that suit that they wore in June would be the sort of thing I like, kind of like an energy suit that protects you from everything. And I thought one of those would be pretty cool.
I like that.
I think anything from the Jetsons, you know, watching the Jetsons growing up, sort of anything to do with flying cars, teleportation, they're super exciting.
Cleaning robots. I'd love a cleaning robot at home.
Yeah.
And what's the best advice you've ever received, Greg?
I think do the yuck things first at the start of the day. So get them out of the way and then focus on the fun things after that. So.
Yeah, I like that. That's good.
Nice one. I think a key one that I also repeat at work quite often is you can do anything, but you can't do everything. So,
nice.
You know, that could be applied to a lot of different things. So I really like that. I really like that.
It's pretty good advice for a startup too. Mm, we always try and do everything, don't we?
Absolutely.
Favorite quote?
If you put fences around people, you get sheep. So take the boundaries away.
Oh, my God. I'm going to steal that too.
Nice one. Here's one from Simon Sinek, which I really like. It's people do not buy what you do. They buy why you do it.
Yeah.
So always go back to the why and explain the why, and it's made such a profound difference in the way I think and in the way I approach things.
And what's your favourite hobby outside work?
I'm a snow skier, so that's why my passion. So we need to fix the climate change problem so that I can keep snow skiing. That's right.
Snow skiing. Mine's definitely to do with sport. Anything to do with sport: football, squash, swimming. Love playing sport with especially with other people, team sports.
We both sound extremely active.
Yeah, absolutely. I spend a lot of time outside when I get the chance, so that's my thing. So it's
another enablement of tech. It actually gets us outside. It's not about keeping us in front of the screen. It's actually about enabling us to be out more.
Yeah, absolutely. And
right, well, that's it. Bit of a false end before.
Nice one.
But thank you so much for your time. We're very grateful. It's actually been really inspiring learning about the company, learning about both of you, and I hope we are able to inspire other tech startups, well, not that you're a startup now, but people who want to have a tech startup to actually move forward and be brave and give it a go. And I'm sure they can track you down if they ever want to ask any advice.
Absolutely. The New Zealand tech community is a relatively small community, and we do share and learn from each other. And we're happy to be part of that.
The information provided in this podcast is a guide and is intended for general information purposes only. The information is not investment advice. The information should not be relied upon as a substitute for detailed advice from a professional advisor. The podcast may contain opinions or forward-looking statements, and actual results may vary from what is expressed in this podcast. The views expressed in this podcast are those of the presenter or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of NZX. NZX Limited is not liable for any loss suffered through relying on the information in this podcast. NZX makes no warranties as to the accuracy or completeness of the information in this podcast. All intellectual property rights in the content of this podcast are owned or used under license by NZX, and NZX's written consent is required to use, redistribute, or reproduce the content, or use it to create other works.